Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
What is up, good people? It is late, and we are here to talk some free agency, Cincinnati Bengals. We were going to maybe do like an abbreviated short show a little bit earlier in the evening, but more and more just kept coming, and so we just kind of decided to do a pretty much a full-blown show here. It's still Monday night for me, not Monday night for John. Yeah, Tuesday morning. Hey, 311 is one of my favorite days, John. 311, because I love the band 311. So it's still 311 for me technically, but not for you. Still, 311 was a busy, busy day for the league and the Bengals for a variety of different reasons. One of the busiest teams on this Monday/Tuesday as well.
I was just scared. Like, if it's still Monday in the United States, does that mean the Bengals can do more things? Because we're so used to them, like. Like, even in this new era of free agency, like, Monday is typically, like, a chill day for them. And it was not chill Monday for the Bengals.
It was not chill. It was not chill. Mike Holbrook, what time is it? Well, for me, it's a cool 9:26 p.m. for me. I'm just kind of getting my evening started. Got the kids to bed. You know, I'm just kind of getting rolling. But there is a lot to get to. We're going to try and get to stuff in chronological order. We're going to try and get to stuff there's so much to kind of get to, and we're going to kind of rehash everything that happened, and then we're going to kind of talk about what this may mean for the next couple of days, maybe even the NFL draft, the directions the Bengals may go ahead here. Again, I'm Anthony Cazenza. He is John Sheeran, and this is the Orange and Black Insider. We do this podcast a few times a week, a couple times a week, especially in season, part of the Cincy Jungle Podcast Network, along with Three and Out with Jason and Kevin, talking football with Bengal Jim and friends, and the coach Matt Minnick doing his thing on the podcast through your favorite audio channels, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, all of them were there. And of course, if you like the video side of things, you got to give a thumbs up to the Cincy Jungle Facebook page. We stream there. We stream to our YouTube channel. There is a show icon underneath that Cincy Jungle icon there on John's side of the screen. Click that. There's a subscribe button that pops up. Click that one. Click the bell to be notified when we go live and when new content is available. And of course, give us a thumbs up if you like what we're doing on the stream. We also stream live to a variety of Twitter accounts as well. Seemingly, despite the time, the day, all this kind of stuff, we went Friday evening and now here on Monday night/Tuesday morning, and we're getting a lot of live viewers, a lot of them from Twitter as well, so liking that. But all right, let's go first up, and kind of with it comes with free agency. There's good news with bad news and bad news with good news, however you want to look at it, whether you're a glass half full or not type of person, that's the reality of it. So the latest with T. Higgins, as the free agency period began on Monday, we started to hear rumblings that T. Higgins has requested a trade from the Cincinnati Bengals to get out of Cincinnati. The timing was, I mean, really for his side of things, impeccable, because it was right before the kickoff of everything. And it was basically, get me out of here. Let me ride this wave of the frenzy that comes with free agency, hopefully get a trade and get myself the long-term deal with the guaranteed money that I am looking for. We know the Bengals, John. That is, they are not going to be strong-armed by agents. They are not going to be strong-armed by players, even ones that they love. And I know the Bengals want T. Higgins here long-term. I think T. Higgins wants to be with the Bengals long-term. But that's where we are. T. Higgins has requested a trade reportedly, I guess through his representation to the team. We'll see what happens here. I am inclined to believe, based on the many, many years I have followed this team, covered this team, everything, to believe that this will not end probably the way that T wants, unless there is a godfather deal on the table for the Bengals.
Yeah, I think we all kind of, we could have guessed that this was coming from the agent's side or from T's camp side, but I think most people are in agreement that this doesn't really change anything in terms of what the Bengals feel they have to do, because obviously the Bengals don't have to do anything. This, I think, is a direct response to, I think, the fear from Athletes First and T thinking that, oh, the double tag is 100% in play, because that's going to be 2 years pay as you go, essentially $47 million. Even if the tag is guaranteed, they don't have to tag him next year. If obviously this year doesn't go well, but if it does go well and the Bengals still feel like they're better with T. Higgins than they aren't, and they don't want to trade him, and they don't feel like they can get the value that they want in a trade for him, they can easily double tag him and be fine in terms of financials. That's obviously not good for Higgins and Mulugeta, especially for their MO, which is obviously in the name of the agency, Athletes First, trying to get the best possible deal for these guys. And they had a great day, by the way. Athletes First really cashed in for sure on a lot of their other clients. Unfortunately for them, it wasn't going to happen with Higgins, especially when they placed the tag on him so quickly. The report from Adam Schefter, I believe it was him, it said that they haven't talked to him in 12 months, which I don't fully believe. And people who with knowledge of the situation have basically confirmed that. I think from their perspective, the talks haven't gone the way that they wanted to, which is the same thing probably in their minds. But I don't think it's been 12 months of radio silence from the Bengals to T. Unfortunately, there's just been minimal progress, and this is a reflection of that. If there isn't going to be a long-term deal done, I 100% get it from T's side that, hey, I want to, you know, have some future stability, even if I end up going to, you know, a team worse off with a worse quarterback. Like, it's all about the bottom line, which is maximizing your earnings. And if he feels like he can't do that in Cincinnati, he doesn't want to play on the tag, I totally get it. But like you said, the Bengals didn't want to trade him then, and they don't want to trade him now. The only thing that changes now is that with Higgins requesting the trade, the Bengals probably went to, or Mulugeta probably thinks that now it's up to me to find a partner that is willing to part with the compensation the Bengals won, which is probably a first round pick. And not only that, but to also pay T the contract that he wants, which he's clearly not going to get for the Bengals. So it's a tall order for Mulugeta in this point. But as far as what the Bengals may do, I don't think that changes.
When I hear radio silence, or when I hear we haven't heard from that side from X amount of months or year, whatever, I picture it as really this kind of scenario where the agency potentially, and this is just in my own mind's eye, of course, but the agency reaches out to the Bengals in their front office and saying, hey, you know, are you ready to talk? Are you ready to deal from what, where our last conversation went? And I think the Bengals, probably from what we know, what we've seen with other contract negotiations in their history, they've got their feet in the sand to say, well, we've already told you what, where we're at, right? I mean, we've told you, and we're not really moving off of this. So if you're willing to meet us where we're not moving from, then we can have a conversation. The other side probably says, no, we have our own position and our own stance of what we want here. And that's that. So I don't think it's been a complete, you know, nobody's talking to anybody type of thing. Personally, I think it's more, I'm not moving from here. Okay. Well, then we're not having a conversation. We're having a conversation about not having a conversation. Right. I mean, that's kind of where it goes. I mean, I think back to and this is a little bit of a different scenario because there wasn't the rookie wage scale in place, and this is a while back, but the Andre Smith contract negotiations when he was drafted and how that was chronicled on Hard Knocks, right? And the Bengals were like, this is where we're at. And finally, you know, the other side kind of caved a little bit, and Andre Smith got there late into training camp. And unfortunately, there were a lot of examples of players coming in late because of contract negotiations being drafted by the Bengals. And that kind of hurt some things there. But I can't blame T for wanting stability in his career and in his life. I do not blame him for that. But I think the situation is just at an unfortunate stalemate. I think this was kind of the last big power move sort of that side could play at this point. And the Bengals, we know, are not, we just know they're not going to cave to a lot of stuff. We've seen it with Carson Palmer, you know, Carlos Dunlap kind of had to force his way out a bit. We've seen this over and over again, and they just do not cave to agent and or player demands very often, unless there is a just sweetheart deal on the table, and then even then sometimes they say thanks but no thanks. So again, I think this still results in T. Higgins being a Bengal for unless there's a big deal that comes down the pike here, but I see him still being a Bengal for one more year, doing the Jesse Bates thing that was done last year, and playing out on that franchise tag whether he really likes it or not. And then hopefully, as he banked on himself last year and that side banked on themselves last year for, you know, a really big season, hopefully for him, he has the bounce back big season and is the consistent player that statistically that he has shown. And then, oh, by the way, hopefully he also contributes to the Bengals having an excellent season because of that as well.
Yeah. And just last thought on this, Andrew Woods in the comment section, how is a disgruntled player going to affect the team? That also kind of went into my mind, knowing that they went through this with Jesse Bates when he held out for the entire summer of 2022. I think that was it. Yeah. So like they've been through this before. They know that he has no leverage. Like, he can sit out all he wants. He's going to play on the tack. It's just too much money to not collect for doing your job. So they know that he doesn't have any leverage in this point. However, I did kind of think, like, do they want to go through that again where it's just a distraction throughout the offseason? How is it going to affect, you know, preparations for the season, especially at such an important position? However, knowing what the Bengals did in that offseason, like, they drafted Bates' supposed future replacement in Dax Hill. Obviously, that's not the case anymore, but they planned ahead for that, and, you know, they obviously invested in a high pick at that position, and they, you know, played him throughout training camp, and they got ready in case, you know, the worst did happen. I kind of see that happening again. Like, it makes all the sense in the world for the Bengals to dip their toes into an extremely deep and talented receiving class early in the draft, like they usually do every 4 years, every leap year. So I think they add even more leverage to the situation where they bring in, you know, like a top 100 pick at the position, and they give him a lot of reps and snaps if he decides to sit out, and they prepare themselves for the season and the future moving forward. So I don't think that they love the idea of having one of their best players not participate in offseason activities, but they know full damn well that when week one rolls around, he's going to be collecting this check.
Yep. And the Bengals have shown time and time again with players and agents, if there's a situation such as this that includes a trade me or I'm out type of thing, they have to feel like they win the trade. Yeah. The trade option or the standoff, whatever it is, they have to feel that way. And unless there's a big deal or T plays on this tag only and that's the deal, or if they really want to stick it to his agent, they tag him again next year. I don't think that's happening. But, there are a number of scenarios to play out. I still have always kind of felt that the likeliest for me, and I could be the idiot on my own little island here, alone on my island, but still always felt just the way that I have seen this team operate, the franchise tag means you're going to play this 1 year here, and then, you know, that's going to be that. And if T unfortunately does not have the strong season, if now the trend goes the other way that follows suit, what happened in 23, maybe then the Bengals feel that they have more leverage there. But I think we all want the best for T Higgins. We all want the best for the Bengals as well. We'll see where this one leads. But for right now, T has requested a trade. The Bengals seem unwilling to do that unless there is something big on the table, and probably will play on the franchise tag for 2024. The Bengals made a number of moves internally, and that's how they kind of started the day. Travion Williams was kind of the first, well, Higgins was the first piece of news, really. I mean, right. And then Travion Williams inking a one-year deal. Drew Sample followed suit with a three-year deal. You had Cody Ford signing another one-year deal. And then, of course, later in the day, Akeem Davis-Gaither, kind of a quietly needed re-signing there, ADG. I thought that was a nice sign, re-signing for them there. So the Bengals get deals done with four guys internally that were set to hit the market to bring them back. So some work internally. That is often how they focus. They've been more outwardly focused the last couple of years, but some good work, I think, on some guys that provide depth, insurance policies, etc.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, two of them, Cody Ford and Davis Gaither, they weren't like vet minimum deals. Like Cody Ford was really close to being vet minimum, but they, I think they gave him like a signing bonus, which they didn't have to. Like, I think for the most part, they offered a lot of these caliber of free agents that they had, like basically like league minimum or veteran salary benefit deals, which is lower cap hit for higher cash. So it makes sense why Davis Gaither and Cody Ford, and that happened like prior to legal tampering even opened up. It makes sense why they took these offers. I think Davis Gaither may have gotten, I want to say, more than what we expected. I think there was probably confusion as to whether or not he would return, because has been like a reserve for the past 4 years. And I think there may have been a chance that he looks elsewhere for a better chance to play. But they clearly valued the depth that he has, and obviously the special teams experience that he has. I'm sure Darren Simmons was a part of that as well. So $3 million for a backup linebacker is, I mean, it's not nothing. So I think there's a statement to be made there. And then Drew Sample. I mean, we've seen some money being thrown around at the tight end position today. Colby Parkinson was like the biggest eye opening to me, for like $7 million a year for him. So 3 years, $3.5 million for a quality blocking tight end number two, who also has versatility as a backfield guy. Like, I think that makes a lot of sense too. I think he did about as well as he possibly could have, even with a robust tight end market. So,
and then some.
pretty good deal for Drew Sample there. And then Travion Williams is probably going to be the vet minimum option, and I don't imagine his options were very expansive outside of Cincinnati.
Williams was in the kickoff return mix late last year, if I remember correctly. Yeah, so they're probably thinking about that scenario with him as well. I say this with the utmost respect, because I thought Drew Sample did have a nice year and was a quietly valuable piece to the Bengals' offense last year, playing that H-back role and doing some different things from tight end spot. But I think trajectory of what you thought, where you thought Drew Sample was going to be drafted, how long he may or may not have been in the league, and then the contract that he got here, I think there's maybe kind of a little bit of an overshooting of expectations of where things have gone, particularly with the stat line. Again, I say that with the utmost respect, but again, I think this is what we saw last year in his role in the offense last year. I think that is a really good indication and a really good piece to the offense going forward. I think there's a lot of value to that. I think there's this will help the running game. Oh, by the way, there's just a little bit more on the running game in a little bit. So it's gonna provide some value there. I think he kind of started to assert himself as a little bit more as an ancillary pass game weapon here and there. So again, I think it's a lot of money, and it's you kind of look at that contract, you go, well, I mean, look at the stats. There's not a lot there, but I think he provides value for all the different things he does on offense. And then on top of that, I think, again, like you said, that the tight end market's just kind of inflated right now. And so I think, right or wrong, this kind of fits, this money and contract fits for what he does and the value he brings for the team, to the team.
And people are going to look at the $10.5 million number, and they're going to say, oh, $10 million for Drew Sample, That seems a lot. That seems really high. Like Robin, Twitter is going crazy about it. It's that deal is essentially Xavier Suafilo 2.0. If people remember, that was 3 years, $10 million. It's actually even cheaper compared to how much the cap is inflated. And also, 10.5 is the max number. I believe it was reported that that includes incentives. So it's really like $9 million total. And the signing bonus, the guaranteed money, is not big. So like those deals, like this is a classic Bengals deal where it is 3 years. It's up to $10.5 million. You can kind of treat it as a year by year basis. If Sample is terrible next year, if Sample is terrible next year, like he can be the next Nick Scott. He can be cut. Like this doesn't lock him in for sure for 3 years. But it is a sign of good faith to say, hey, Drew, you're even if you're not the most important part of the offense, you still have a role here, and we still want to compensate you for that. And that's what it is.
I wasn't trying to interrupt you, but up to like both sides of the contract was, I mean, that contract can be coined as up to, quote unquote. Right. I mean, right. It's just, so I think it makes a lot of sense. And it's a guy that you look at the stat lines and you go, well, I mean, man, you're paying, you know, X amount of dollars for this kind of player, but it's a dirty work player. Right. It's a dirty work player. He does a lot of the dirty work stuff. He proved that last year. He proved some versatility. I'm fine with it as long as it doesn't hamstring them elsewhere. And I don't think it does. So, I think it's a solid depth move at a position that they absolutely have to have guys and guys that they trust at this point. Tight ends are at a premium right now across the league, especially veteran guys who have proven their worth. So,
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Anyway, so we're going to move on, and we are going to talk about some of the outside guys that the Bengals inked. And I gotta say, you and I have mentioned this guy's name, I don't know, a month and a half ago after the Bengals season ended. I was like, yeah, this guy seems like a fit. You were way more on this than I was, but I think we both felt like this should be a guy the Bengals target. And then we, by the way, I don't like to be the keep receipts guy. Can I just show you something, John? Sure. I have to show this. So this is the comments section on our comment section on our YouTube channel. And so someone right after we posted the Geno Stone player profile, I just got to give a shout out to Randall Wilson with the numbers after. So I don't know how many, But let me get this right. None of you in any of these Bengals fandom spaces were even remotely correct about any of the draft trades or free agency acquisitions last season. And yet you continue with the same old waste of time exercise again this year. Whatever. Truth is, you don't know crap about crap concerning anything that goes on with the people who actually make decisions about building Cincy's roster. Do yourself a favor and just shut up about football until the season starts back this fall. So that was a comment we received about 3 weeks ago when we decided to do a player profile on Geno Stone. Randall, I hope you're doing okay. And not the Randall behind John Sheeran. I hope Randall Wilson is doing okay, given the news that Geno Stone is now a Cincinnati Bengal. And we previewed him 3 weeks ago. Not a receipt keeper. I'm just a well-wisher, John. So I hope the from YouTube is doing all right. That being said, the Bengals land Geno Stone. I feel like this was like the guy at the top of their free agent list that was like, we got to get this guy. And I said last Friday, I don't like the idea of kind of chasing your tail with the whole Jesse Bates thing. You kind of wasted a year with some of this stuff, but you have a cheaper player. You have a guy who has a propensity to create turnovers, at least this last season, 7 interceptions. And oh, by the way, you weaken your division opponent by signing this guy. 2 years, $14 million. ESPN tabbed this as an A-plus move and one of the best moves of free agency. Other aggregators on Twitter have done the same. Great, great move for Cincinnati in one of their first outside moves, getting safety Geno Stone on their defense.
Well, for starters, we've both been wrong plenty of time, but I feel like our process in terms of talking about this stuff is pretty solid. In the process with identifying Geno Stone, that was always backed in logic. You talk about a player who's 25 years old, who was ascending, and a very talented defense, who played in meaningful games. That's something the Bengals value too. Obviously, the experience against the Bengals and the AFC North, that was a plus. The quality play against the Bengals, how many safeties fooled Joe Burrow in a disguised coverage and get an interception in the red zone? Like, that was something that they definitely remembered. So you have a career arc that is kind of reminiscent, not all the way to Trey Hendrickson, but a similar path as a guy who became a more involved player in a defense in years 3 and 4 and really started to show his potential at that point. Getting him on the cheap, it's not only good for the player in this case in Geno Stone, because he's going to be 27 by the time this contract ends, so he can re-up for a third deal at 27, but it's also good for the Bengals in that sense, where, again, it's a guy right in their age range that they want, a guy who's playing his best ball right now, a guy who has big game experience, and the exact fit in the defense could not be better itself. They have their cover two half-field safety in Jordan Battle. I think they have a plan to play Dax Hill closer to the line of scrimmage, whether it be in the box, be in the slot, overhang, guarding tight ends, whatever the case may be. They need a free safety. Geno Stone, if he wasn't the best free safety available in this year's class, he was one of the best. He obviously had the most productive season last year. I don't know if he's ever going to get 7 interceptions in a single season again, but the ball hawks, the ball skills, the range, the instincts, and just the trust that he earned in that Baltimore defense that was completely multiple. It obviously gave the Bengals fits for the past 2 years with Mike McDonald was coordinating the defense. The fact that they trusted him alongside Marcus Williams and Kyle Hamilton to man that spot, I think was a big factor in it as well. I think they had tremendous respect for who Geno Stone was becoming, and to get him on this deal while other safeties, I think, were making a little bit more in terms of average annual value, I think this was a great signing for sure. And it made a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think it's a great signing. Like the Orlando Brown signing last year, this weakens one of your biggest rivals, right? And I don't like to read too much into like social media and reactions and all that kind of stuff, but when you see a lot of former Ravens players being pretty pissed off, quite frankly, that he's gone. And granted, I think it's to the Bengals that really sticks in their craw, but
yeah,
you know, Lamar make it. It all comes from a good place and they wish him well, of course, and they're happy for him on a level, but the fact that he is gone and not on their team and not on their defense anymore, I think they're like, well, damn. This was a good player. This is a guy who balled out for us last year. And so I think this is so now that I'm curious about what you think about this here, about what this signing means for the secondary of the Bengals. you know, I think that you could have kind of a rotation thing going. I actually mean this as a positive instead of kind of a demotion sounding type of thing for Dax Hill. I mean, I think it maybe pushes Dax Hill more into the slot, more into that Trey Flowers type of role more often. And Trey Flowers was very effective in that role. I think that Dax Hill would be in that role and get more snaps in that role than Trey Flowers did. And I think it just makes the defense better. I think it gives them more flexibility, more experience. And this is the difference between Bengals free agency 2020 through 2024 and all the years prior. The Bengals were getting guys that were either, you know, first round fizzle outs and trying to get, get maximize those deals. It worked out sometimes for them. Other times it did not. They got guys on their third contract, maybe even their fourth contract, sometimes way later in their career that were prior bigger names. Remember like Carlos Dansby and Sam Adams and all those kind of guys. And now what they're doing with your DJ Readers, your, I know it didn't work out, Trey Waynes, all of these guys over the past couple of years, it's their second contract. They're mid 20s. They're not close to 30 or well over 30. And you're trying to squeeze that last little bit out of their career type of thing. These are guys hitting their prime. These are guys that are ascending players in terms of how they've, I mean, it's a little bit of a risk because Stone last year had this gigantic jump and statistically and everything. But I think the Bengals read that as, hey, this is an ascending guy. This is a guy who can come into our system and continue to grow, and we'll put him in a position to succeed, much like the Ravens did last year. So I love this move. Love it.
Yeah, and I think there is the slight risk of the inexperience maybe because he only had 1 year starting, and I think a lot of the Ravens were elevated because of Mike McDonald, and that's why he got a head coaching gig as early as he did. So there's that factor into it, which is why I think a two-year deal also makes sense, because if it doesn't work out, there's obviously an easy out with it. But it does, I think it does speak a lot to what they feel about him because of what they need, not only in terms of just talent, but in terms of trust. Like, obviously they don't trust Dax Hill to do what Jesse Bates did. Like, this is pretty clear in that, and they're pivoting away from that plan going forward. And to bring in a guy who's not that much older and obviously, you know, doesn't have multiple years of starting at this position, I think it speaks a lot to what they identified. And it's a risk in that regard, because I think you might be more comfortable with Justin Simmons taking over. That obviously would cost more, but like, if that was where the Bengals were prioritizing, they need like an established veteran rather than maybe an ascending guy. Like, I could understand that. So there's obviously, you know, gives and takes with this. There's also the issue of he's not the best tackler. Like, that's why he didn't necessarily break the bank. He's not the true all around do it all safety like Xavier McKinney. He's going to have his shortcomings, and the Bengals are going to have to, you know, adjust with that. But this was a clear sign that they needed someone that they can trust to limit explosive plays. They needed someone that could get in quarterback's head, and that's what they're doing. And yes, I definitely think that Dax is going to be living closer to the line of scrimmage. He might still fill in for maybe Jordan Battle here and there. I think we'll give him some occasional snaps at safety. I know we had someone asking, should Dax Hill start in the slot instead of Mike Hilton? I don't think it's that simple, but I think there could be situations where on passing downs, you might have Dax in the slot, and on base downs, you might have Mike Hilton there because he's better against the run. So I think they can get creative with that. And that's the whole thing with Dax, though, because he was used to be this, you know, Swiss Army knife, could do everything. And now the message is, let him do one thing well, right? And that's the transition to this offseason. And he's going to be playing a position that he was more familiar with, obviously, coming out of Michigan. And I think that's probably the best in terms of getting the most out of him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's transition, because we showed the other name on that graphic there as to an outside addition. And this is likely the biggest news of the day in a lot of ways, because it's a one for one, one in, one out, and it's a big name that went out for the Cincinnati Bengals. And it's one that's been floating around for really the past three off seasons, and a guy who's played well for the Bengals for the past seven seasons. And that is Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon is out. Zach Moss is in at running back. Mixed emotions, mixed feelings on a lot of different levels with this one, but this was a business decision. This was a decision that I think maybe points to a little bit higher efficiency in a lot of different ways with Moss in there and Mixon not in there. And then, of course, you know, some of the contract. I mean, the premier running backs in free agency, Saquon got a big deal, and Swift got a big deal, and others. But, you know, I mean, you saw kind of where running backs are at. And so I look at this in a couple of different ways, John. I look at this and I say that the Bengals are going to go probably largely by committee in running back. They may not even be done in terms of adding to that group. Maybe there's another high-ish pick in the draft that comes into this group. Zach Moss had a nice year last year. Joe Mixon has statistically been pretty solid, but there are other areas in which the Bengals need to improve at that position. And, you know, last episode, I mentioned that I felt like, you know, with all the Mixon talk, I felt it was more like the Bengals need to refine, much like they needed to kind of refine some of the stuff that they lost with Jesse Bates. They need to refine some of the stuff that they lost with Samaje Perine. And I feel like Moss almost brings some of those aspects that they lost with Perine in terms of pass pro, a little bit of versatility, that sort of thing. Mixon's going to be missed. There's a lot of elements that and there's a level of respect for what he did for the Bengals in terms of statistics and history and whatnot. But this was a business decision in terms of dollars and cents. And cents, I also mean with C-E-N-T-S and S-E-N-S-E sense. So that's that, you know, that's the big move here. It happened late on Monday, and that's where the Bengals are at this point. Zach Moss is in and Joe Mixon is out. Zach Moss is in 2 years, $8 million, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So that's, I think it was $4.5 million in cash this year. So the cap hit's going to be somewhat close to that. So that's saving both cap space and cash. It's minimal in terms of the savings. I don't think there's much that the Bengals could do in terms of maximizing that savings. It's more to the fact that it makes more sense to pay your I guess lead back at this rate compared to what you're paying for Mixon. And obviously this doesn't happen if I think the date doesn't unfold like it did, because the top dogs and Saquon, Josh Jacobs, Tony Pollard, DeAndre Swift, they all got, I think, at least $8 million or more. I think Saquon got like almost 13 or 14 or something ridiculous like that. And then the mid-tier market of running back kind of formed. There was Gus Edwards, Antonio Gibson, Devin Singletary, all got in that $5.5 to $6 million range. And that's right when Mixon's financials started to look more like a hindrance rather than a value. And that's when Zach Moss really entered the picture, I think, when he stood out as probably one of the best available guys that could take, again, I'm not going to label him as a bell cow. I'm not going to label him even as a starter, because I feel like people kind of get carried away with those distinctions. The Bengals no longer have a running back room where you're comfortable or not. You would even want to give the ball 18 times to the same guy in one game. Like, those days are pretty much over, and it's for the best for what the Bengals, I think, want to do offensively with the run game. But like you said, you're paying less for a guy who statistically, objectively, going by the film and the numbers, breaks more tackles on a per carry basis, gains more explosive yardage on a per carry basis, and essentially is the same in terms of ball security. Moss has only had one fumble in the past 2 years. Mixon's obviously had none. Ball security has been Mixon's, I guess, greatest strength as a Bengal over the past couple of years. It's what people have been really leaning on in terms of, you know, projecting the positives to him. And there's obviously going to be some aspects of the game where if you just compare both of them, Mixon will come out on top compared to Moss. But this whole conversation for the past 12 months has really lacked nuance. And that's where the nuance has to come back into this equation, because it's not just Moss for Mixon. There's a net positive in taking out Mixon and inserting Moss for the betterment of the entire offense, for the betterment of just the pure sake of value. And I think this was the smart way to go about this. Again, it wasn't a given. If running backs like Singletary and those guys, if they started getting $8 million a year, if Zach Moss's market was $7, $8 million a year, like, there's no way that they do this. They only do this if it makes financial sense, but it also matches up from a football perspective as well.
It does. It's tough, though. I mean, Mixon was here for some of the worst times. You know, I mean, you look back to, you know, the end of 2018, and, you know, 2019 was kind of not fun. The end of 2020 wasn't fun when Burrow got hurt, not left, but you know, and then he was here for, you know, he had that killer play in the Super Bowl and all. I mean, he was here for some of the best runs, and that Super Bowl year, he was a really productive guy, and that was that he, you know, he showed a lot that year. You know, I think he and P. Ryan, that 21-22, those 2 years were great with both of them together, really kind of getting their shine. And so, you know, it's a tough decision, but they felt it necessary. What I'm curious is what we talked about this on Friday. What does this potentially mean? What does this point to in the savings? And it doesn't just point potentially just to Zach Moss coming in and there's a money savings and there's maybe a little bit of a, hey, we can get more for a little bit less, that sort of thing, or as much, if not a little pluses in other areas type of thing for less. It's what else does this enable you to do? And it enables you to be flexible in terms of signing other players. The Bengals are having a tough time getting, they're really in the mix with the Lions and the Titans, I think, for DJ Reader. So they're really scrumming with them to try and get DJ Reader back. You've got potentially trying to work a long-term deal with T. Higgins. If you feel that ship hasn't totally sailed at this point, you still have some needs at defensive tackle and other areas. So, you know, I think, you know, maybe this was just, man, this is a tough decision, but there's so many other areas that we really want to try and shore up on this team. And this is maybe a position and or a contract that seems expendable at this point.
It was. And I think that factors into it at some point. But again, I don't think that, like, the contract is definitely more flexible and affordable. And I think it matches the true value of the position more. But in terms of just this year, again, it's paying the lead back about $1.5 million less, and compared to the cap, obviously it's $4 million in savings or whatnot. So that could probably fit in a free agent signing for sure. I think more so, this is just a reflection of where they were going as an offense. And we could clearly see over the past 2 years that despite the positives that Joe Mixon still had, you know, deep into a career for running back, he just didn't really fit. And I think continuing to have this weird marriage of the run game that works for Mixon and the rest of the offense, what it needs to do, I just think they wanted to move on and they wanted to get a clear, better fit. And obviously, when you have multiple guys who are interchangeable and have similar but varying skill sets, like this is going to be Zach Moss, Chase Brown, and potentially like a mid-round pick with also explosion, right? If you have all three of those guys rotating in and out of the game, all of them can be relied on any down that it is. You're not giving the defense a tell about what the play is in the pre-snap. You can go under center with them. You can go on the shotgun with them. Zach Moss is really good out of the shotgun, as is Chase Brown. All those things, I think, add up to this decision, making it a lot easier. But again, it doesn't happen if they don't get to pay Zach Moss what they paid him. So I think that how the day ended up definitely led to this point. But I think going in this direction was the plan all along as well.
And I think that we're looking at potentially the Bengals doing something in the draft.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And gosh, what a segue. Because another piece of news, we got a lot to get to tonight, and we're gonna close up in just a little bit here, but another piece of news that came across the wire here, who was it, Nick Corte, is that who it was? Yes. that started this, pushed this snowball down the hill. So credit to him. Look, he basically, more or less, in a more eloquently way than I'm gonna put it, said some teams got screwed in the compensatory pick formula this year, and the Bengals were one of them, because the Bengals were getting 2 6th round picks from the losses of Jesse Bates and, you know, Von Bell and others. And that was just kind of how the formula worked out. Well, Corte did his own math, because he's way smarter than me, and said, you know, this is BS. A team like the Bengals needed to get a higher pick. The NFL apparently reevaluated things and announced on Monday that the Bengals are going to be getting they're still going to maintain one of the 6th round picks, but the other 6th round pick is going to be bumped up to the 3rd round, which is what, pick 100, I think?
97.
So big, big bump. Now, I know the Bengals and their compensatory picks, they hoard them. They haven't hit on a lot of them and all this kind of stuff. But going from a 6th round pick to a 3rd round pick, that's a big, big jump. And it makes night two of the draft far more exciting for the Bengals. Gives them also ammunition to maybe move up if they wanted to do that. And so kind of some big news on that front for the Bengals here, with the Bengals getting another 3rd round pick from the reassessed compensatory pick formula.
It is funny how potentially this all started from like the most niche NFL analyst that there could possibly be.
Someone who specializes
in compensatory picks formula, but like all of his logic tracked. And I think that's why it got as much movement as it did. I don't think we've talked about this on the show, but essentially what it was Orlando Brown signed almost the same exact deal in terms of just total value as Jesse Bates over a 4-year period. So how the comp pick formula works is essentially if you sign a player at a certain average annual value and you lose a player of that same value, like you don't get the comp pick because they cancel out. So initially, both Bates and Brown were viewed as 4th round picks based off of just, again, average annual value, snaps played, accolades, all that stuff. And Corte went through the formula and went through all the point systems and everything. And he said, yeah, the cutoff is a lot lower than it used to be. And a guy like Jesse Bates typically is going to be worth a 3rd round compensatory pick. And if Orlando Brown is viewed as a 4th all the way below him, then the Bengals should get a net third in that process, which was the crux of the whole issue. I think the 49ers and another team, maybe the Bills, were also potentially screwed in that. But the NFL apparently looked it over and said, yeah, our math was wrong. So the Bengals get a 3rd round comp pick here. And obviously, like you said, Anthony, is phenomenal for their draft plans. That's 4 picks in the top 100. It makes, I think, free agency better, because I don't think you want to enter the draft with clear and obvious needs. But if you do end up, you know, having a desperate need at tight end or having a desperate need at that 4th cornerback, I think just having that extra pick in your arsenal makes the draft a lot easier. It makes potentially, and I say this with a big grain of salt, it makes a potential trade easier as well, because if you want to entertain like pick swaps, whether it be for like a John Allen or facilitating a T. Higgins trade as well, I think just having that extra 3rd round pick in your back pocket as extra flexibility makes sense as well. So it was really close in terms of like if Bates was actually going to make the cutoff, but I think what actually pulled it over the top was him making the Pro Bowl. That factors into like how those picks are calculated, and obviously he played like 99% of the snaps for Atlanta. So if Atlanta doesn't sign him that deal and he doesn't have the season that he does, we're not looking at 3rd round pick for sure.
We aren't. And I almost wonder too, if, you know, I don't know when the Bengals may have heard this news, if they caught wind of it far before we all did, you know, from the league. It's what made them, you know, kind of get a little aggressive with Geno Stone and made them a little bit more open to the idea of letting Joe Mixon go, you know, because then they say, hey, we've got another 3rd round pick. So we've got potentially a night 2 pick that we can get another running back should we want one. So I'm not fully clear on all of the logistics there, but again, this flexibility and options. That's what this offseason is about. That's what the free agency period is about for this team. And going into the draft, they want that. So, that's pretty big news. And you know, the pick that they make with that, or the trade that they make with that, may not end up working out as we all kind of dream that it will, but I do think that, you know, it gives them a chance at a player that could be another solid starter rotator. I mean, depending on what position they choose and the player that they get. So I think it's pretty big news for the Bengals to be able to get another pick there in the 3rd round. And, you know, especially now, John, when you see the defensive tackle market is starting to dwindle a little bit in the free agency side, the tight end market is thin right now. And so you look at another Knight 2 pick and you go, hey, whether we maneuver with it or whether we stay put and get a position that we need, it's good. It's good to have in that back pocket.
For sure. And I'm genuinely curious whether or not the Bengals had any inclination that this was coming. I don't think it would have impacted their plans too much, if not right. at all. But I do think that it, I mean, again, that third round pick, it could be a defensive tackle. It could be a running back. It could be a tight end. I think the possibilities are pretty open in terms of what they can do. We'll obviously have to look at their history with what positions they typically target in that range. Obviously, defensive line and tight end kind of immediately come to the front of my mind there. But yeah, huge win for sure. Not much more I can add.
Yeah, huge win for them. And we'll see if the, you know, what they end up doing with it. But nice to have in that back pocket for sure. We've got just one more to get to. Long night and show. But the big million-dollar question, John Sheeran, what do we see happening next? I mean, I think, again, the most reasonable. So let's kind of run down a little bit of needs and who they've been connected to at this point. So connected to the Bengals, there was a rumor early on Monday that they were connected to cornerback Kendall Fuller, of one of the, three Fuller brothers who've played in the NFL at defensive back from Washington. They were connected there. There's some rumblings that they were close to a deal, that sort of thing. He had some great PFF scores and different things that would fit really the mold there. And then with Chidobe Awuzie leaving, and we'll recap, by the way, some of the people who left too. We want to show you that too, just so you know, and you're caught up with that. But with Awuzie leaving, you know, the Bengals are potentially needing another corner. Again, you mentioned DJ Turner and the propensity for him to take a leap next year. We'll see what happens there. But Kendall Fuller was a guy that they are connected to. So probably a corner of some kind, whether it's a reserve or maybe a big one like that, interior defensive line, whether that's DJ Reader or one of the three techs. You know, the Bengals were connected to Sheldon Rankins, a guy a couple of years ago before he signed with the Jets in 21. The Bengals were in the running very late with him. They didn't get him, and then they saw him just decimate them last year when he was with the Texans. I think he had three sacks in that game. So that's a guy I think they're looking at. I believe T.R. Tartt is still available. That was a guy that they tried to get at the trade deadline last year, right? So there are a number of players I think that they could go to. It has to be tight end. It has to be interior defensive line. And it has to be corner that they look at. In terms of their philosophy, I say those positions because of their philosophy that they like to enter the draft without any incredibly pressing needs, positionally speaking.
Yeah, I mean, Kendall Fuller would arguably be the best possible free agent that the Bengals could sign at this point, which is, I mean, obviously the position and the money he's expected to command was, it made it surprising. It would be a statement towards, obviously, DJ Turner, like you mentioned. But I think for the past few years, the Bengals have prioritized getting four quality cornerbacks within that room, knowing that injuries are inevitable. And I think especially because, unfortunately for DJ Turner, he just didn't end his rookie season on a high note, and there may be a shadow of a doubt that he can be the player that they want him to be. So Fuller would be a big statement and would be the bulk, I think, of the remaining money outside of DJ Reader. I think it was telling that they've been in the mix for all this time, especially with Detroit making such a push at him. The Titans are also in on him because the Titans are just spending money willy-nilly, and they're signing a bunch of veterans under Brian Callahan for his first year. But the Bengals are definitely willing to, I think, pony up the money for DJ Reader. We'll just see if it is the length and the guarantees that he is getting offered from elsewhere. Outside of that, I think they will sign a tackle of some sort. It could be Jonah Williams for all we know, if Jonah's market just doesn't materialize.
Right.
But I would bet that it's going to be a spot starter outside of him, just for the sake of just moving on from that relationship. And yeah, outside of that, I mean, I think we can expect that Tanner Hudson is coming back at some point, but he might be getting interest elsewhere if he hasn't resigned just yet. But yeah, I don't think the Bengals are going to just have Drew Sample at tight end entering the draft. So they'll do something else there.
What about the guys that the Bengals let walk last offseason? And by the way, this is a little bit of free agency frenzy cautionary tales when you see guys a year later. And I mean, God bless Hayden Hurst. We know what happened there. That was a brutal injury situation that happened there. But a guy like him, CJ Uzama, right? I mean, we talked about a couple of those guys, and then Von Bell becoming available. I mean, do you see any likelihood that this is where the Bengals end up going, or are those the guys that they say, you know, we're going to let free agency ride? If you get signed, so be it. But we're waiting until after the draft for players like that, and that's when we kind of jump into some of these rental deals for some of these guys that were valuable to the team in their short terms that they were with them and now are available.
Yeah, I mean, like for Von Bell, if he would want to come back and be like the new Mike Thomas, I could see that. But yeah. I think the opportunity for him to be like a significant contributor has definitely passed. It passed last year when they didn't make too much of an effort to keep him around. Hayden Hurst would be the same type of thing. I don't think any team's really in a rush to sign him, especially because it'll be vet minimum. He's essentially getting paid by the Carolina Panthers to play football this year. If he wants to play football this year, that's, I think, another thing that they have to consider. I mean, outside of that, it's just, it is what Uzama and Carl Lawson, and I guess that's multiple years in the past. So yeah, I'm not really expecting any of those reunions to happen, or at least happen soon.
Yeah. I think the Bell thing may have run its course with the Stone signing. I get that it's different players and different skill sets, but I think the Bengals are maybe more committed, like you said, to Jordan Battle and the development there. And then, you know, you have Stone, and then you can kind of mix Dax Hill in where you can there. So I don't see too many reunions in the future necessarily. Maybe, I mean, reunion, if you want to say Reader, I think Reader's the one they want to get done. They want to get another three tech. They would like, I think, a tight end, but the pickings are pretty slim at this point. So they got to figure that out. I think Hurst would be a nice get, but I don't think it would be for the role in which he came to the Bengals in 22. I think this is that would be a backup ancillary type of situation just to fill out the depth. And then the Bengals would probably, I assume, go into the draft, and probably by night two, by the conclusion of night two, with this third round pick that was a sixth round pick, they would probably have picked another tight end to bolster that group, I would think. We say that every year, though, and they they don't seem to want to do that. But those are some of the areas. Again, I mentioned Sheldon Rankins. There's a lot of just kind of history there, and some others. T.R. Tartt, like we said, I think those are the areas to look, as well as DJ Reader for the interior of the defensive line. But they've got running back checked off the box. They've got safety checked off the box, and a couple of other depth spots checked off the boxes as well.
I'm going to call my shot, because why not? It's like 1:20 in the morning. I'm going to say that they end up signing Adam Trautman, who played college ball at Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
Did not pan out in two different Sean Payton offenses, but 27 years old, has all around starting experience, would be probably no more expensive than slightly more than what Drew Sample got. I still think that there should be a priority, or there was a priority, to get some type of starter at that spot. And I don't think it was going to be Tanner Hudson. Tanner Hudson might be like the last resort pivot in that sense, but I do think that they end up leaving free agency with some type of tight end like that. And I think Trautman makes sense. In terms of tackle, it could be Becton. It could be George Fant. I think both those guys make some sense. You mentioned T.R. Tartt. I go back and forth with him because they placed a waiver claim on him, but that was obviously when he was making pennies on the dollar. I don't know how much interest they would have on him for significantly more, because they would have to pay him like at least $7-8 million a year. But if they do lose DJ Reader, the pivot off of him has to be quick, because that is 100% an area that cannot just leave unaddressed entering the draft for sure.
Yeah, and here, I mean, we've mentioned it. I'll just show you this here. This is the departures. I think at this point we kind of know, you know, what happened here. Joe Mixon, Chidobe Awuzie. Awuzie signed a 3-year deal. A little bit surprising given the injury that he had a couple of years ago, and he had some ups this year and maybe some, I don't want to call them downs necessarily, but you can kind of tell he was coming back from a pretty severe injury, I think. And so that is also causing potentially the Bengals to pivot onto a guy like Fuller that we mentioned there. But those are the major departures for the Bengals so far in free agency. And so that's where we are right now. A flurry of activity for the Cincinnati Bengals. Geno Stone's a good get. I think it's a tough day a little bit emotionally just because of the long term and the history and everything with Joe Mixon. But again, this has been something that's been lingering for 3 off seasons now. The potential of that occurring and him not being a Bengal for better or for worse. And we'll see what happens there. A couple of other just news and notes around the AFC North, John, and please feel free to fill in any if I miss any. Russell Wilson now added to the Pittsburgh Steelers, likely, I would assume, the starting quarterback. I mean, barring something unforeseen there, they opted not to go with Mason Rudolph as a re-signing. They're saying he's going to battle it out with Kenny Pickett. I think we know where that's going to go there. But so that's a big get. Actually, Zach Moss, the Browns were deep in the running for Zach Moss's services as well. They did make a trade for Jerry Jeudy, did they not? So
they did.
Yeah, the Browns now bolster their wide receiver group. So that's a guy that they have, but they were pursuing Zach Moss. The Ravens are seemingly interested in Derrick Henry. So they lost Gus Edwards to the Chargers to their head coach's brother, who is now coaching the Chargers. So Gus Edwards is now going to the Chargers. And so the Ravens are going to look at veteran running back options, Derrick Henry being one of them. Those are some of the options. Did I miss any? I mean, those are real surface level things. Did I miss any there that I should be talking about, John, that I can't think of off the top of my head?
I think Cleveland spent most of the day re-signing their own. Like, they brought back Za'Darius Smith and Maurice Hurst to the defensive line. They were in on Christian Wilkins, who, Anthony, $110 million over 4 years for Christian Wilkins.
Silly money. Silly money. Just,
that's classic Raiders right there.
That's Raiders money. That's Raiders money. Yeah.
But yeah, pretty wild day, I think, all things considered. And we'll have more to discuss in the next coming days as well.
Absolutely. Want to get this because this is a super chat here from Mr. Whisper. Mr. Generosity, please, I know you've sent us an email. Get us your email address. We want to send you something nice. Please, you are so, so generous. You have donated to so many causes that we have supported on the show when we have asked for these super chats. Please, please, please send us another email, theobinsider@gmail.com. So we can properly thank you. You have been insanely generous to our show. We appreciate it, as have a lot of you, by the way, and insanely generous to a lot of different charities that we have supported from Bengals fans. This day was a W all around. I'd like to see us address right tackle depth and defensive tackle. I think that is definitely the name of the game here going forward, and the Bengals will probably do that. I seem to feel like, yeah, they do some things on day one, which is what happened today. Day two, maybe a little quiet. That's just kind of been the trend in these last handful of years. And it seems like day three is kind of day three, or that bridge into those 2 days, is kind of when they kind of come alive on some of these things. Wasn't that when they signed OBJ last year, Orlando Brown, that day two, day three ish type of.
Dude, they did nothing the first 2.5 days last
year. Like that, right? Right.
And I'm not crazy. It was Wednesday. It was Wednesday night, and my friend's like, hey, let's go grab a drink. And I'm like, I've been slaving on my computer waiting for something to happen. All right, I'll do it. I take my first sip. I look at my phone. It's Orlando Brown signing. Like, God damn it.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. That was me today. I was a meathead at the gym for a little bit during lunch. And, you know, of course it was, you know, they signed Geno Stone and they do, you know, they do all this stuff. And I'm like, oh,
Jake okay, was at the gym too. When
Geno I know. It happens to the best of us. But hey, John, you are a champ, my friend. I appreciate you coming on. It is late for you. You've had a hell of a long day. I appreciate you. I can't believe the amount of live viewers we have right now.
That's why we're here.
Wherever, I mean, I've got people, you know, we've got comments coming from people from Australia and all kinds of stuff. This is insane. The amount of live viewers right now, insane, particularly on Twitter, insane. Appreciate all of you. If you are new here, like I said, go subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can click the, if you're watching on YouTube, you can click the show icon underneath that Cincy Jungle icon on John's side of the screen. Subscribe, click the bell, do the thing, like the show if that's your thing. And then of course on the audio side of things, any major audio streamer, the Cincy Jungle podcast channel, please go subscribe to that, get our show and others. We appreciate all of you. And man, like I said, John's a champ for staying up this late. You all are champs for hanging with us this late, and we can't thank you enough. The Bengals had a busy ass day on day one, and hopefully more to come to improve their football team and make a run at things in 2024. John, thank you, buddy, and we'll talk soon, my friend.
Time to sleep.